Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Yeah, hey, how's it going? My name is Vyom Upadhyay, and my current role is as Executive Director of Digital and Software with a preventative healthcare company called MDVIP. How are you doing today?
Great, Vyom. Thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. So before we dive in and talk about all of the great things you're currently building and doing within your current company, maybe give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm almost a native South Floridian, grew up most of my life here. And once graduated college, the first 10 years of my career were focused on consulting with large telecommunications and cable operators. So I used to work for a company that built products in the billing and CRM space, basically help these companies manage their customers and roll out new services. And then in addition to that, I also ended up doing some consulting on my own. So helping lead business transformations for these organizations, P&L for some customer account management, and then obviously started getting into more senior technical roles with change management, architecture, et cetera. So that was the first 10 years of my professional life. And then from that point on, I shifted over to healthcare and have been doing that in the last 10 years. Sort of similar kind of concept, leading large transformations, both in the digital space, as well as, you know, helping employees with the needs they have within an organization, and obviously leveraging software to do that. Most recently, in the last few years, probably right around the pandemic, two more areas of focus that I have spent some time on. So there's sort of the idea of fixing US-based healthcare through technology and preventative medicine. And that's sort of my one hat I wear as part of my role at MDVIP. The other focus I've developed over the last few years is this focus on helping mid-market companies really define and deploy a good technology strategy so that they can become resilient and they can grow rapidly. And so that's a bit of a side hustle as a fractional CTO, and I've had a number of clients, and so that work is going well and it's meaningful. And then last but not least, I've always been passionate about leadership development and focus. And that's where my involvement with the Society of Information Management comes in. And I've been blessed that for the last, since January of 2023, I've taken on the presidency for that chapter here in South Florida with our mission to really build a technology leadership hub in our region and community.
That's super exciting and appreciate you sharing the background. It's very diverse and seems like we have quite a few synergies from the kind of the healthcare perspective and just overall technology spectrum. So, you know, there's a lot to unpack here. Before we do that, maybe share a little bit more insight, what you're currently doing with the Sim South Florida organization. How did you get involved? And what is really the kind of the broader mission with all of the activities and the great events that you guys put together?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, if you think about the South Florida ecosystem, there is a ton of activity, right? Successful stories of startups and companies that are just growing out of the ground, attracting a lot of capital and talent from across the country. The pain point and the need that we felt with Sim in South Florida was that really there isn't an organization or a capability available to us that helps us develop leaders in the technology space. So even if you look at the startup ecosystem, you know, you'll start it as a founder or a co-founder, maybe you're really great at developing products and developing software, but then you start growing, right? You get your Series A, B, C, you now have a dev team that you're running, maybe the organization grows and you have more employees and now you're essentially a CEO. And where do you go to school for that, right? Like, how do you become a great leader? How do you become impactful in your leadership? And that is the acute problem that we saw in our community, that there really wasn't a path for leadership development and unlocking, you know, future CTOs, CIOs, specifically in the technology space. I'll throw some key kind of stats at you. I mean, Korn Ferry, which is the probably the best executive recruiting firm out there for with a broad nationwide presence and a lot of clients, you know, they did a research study a year or two ago where they identified that only 14% of all companies have identified talent internally for future technology leadership roles, right? So if you know, if there's 100 companies in South Florida which are dependent on technology to thrive and to grow their businesses and to become resilient against these sort of macroeconomic or other kind of pressures, only 14 of them really have the bench to be able to take on those challenges, right? You know, Forbes even gave a more pessimistic view where, you know, I think 1 out of 10 organizations have a strong or very strong leadership bench. So this whole leadership intersection with technology is one that many organizations are trying to crack, and there really aren't great solutions available. And so what's great about SIM is that first, we're a nonprofit. So we're not in this to, you know, we're not in this for profit. We're not in this to drive growth and revenue of an organization. We measure our impact by how many leaders are we creating, nurturing, and really unlocking in the South Florida community. And there's a huge demand for that. I mean, even if you go to LinkedIn today, you'll see hundreds of technology leadership roles in South Florida, right? Anything from managers to directors to above. So how do we do this, right? So this is kind of like our big why in terms of building this technology leadership hub in South Florida. So we do this in probably two to three ways. The first way is that we bring some of these leadership development programs that are nationally available, have been running for 30 odd years. My favorite one is there's a program called the Regional Leadership Forum that SIM offers. And it's this, you know, I call it like a 6 to 9 month, almost a lobotomy of your leadership talent, where they unpack and repack everything that you think you feel and know as a leader, and really help you grow. And whether you want to become a servant leader or you want to develop another leadership style, really help you grow in terms of how you drive that impact. So that's one way we do that, is to bring that program to the local community, connect with companies that are down here, encourage them to offer that as a option of training for their emerging leaders, and at a very cost-effective rate, because again, we're a nonprofit, so we're really just trying to cover our internal costs. And if you look at, you know, other sort of technology leadership programs out there, I mean, you're talking tens of thousands of dollars, and we offer a very competitive alternative to that. So that's one way. And then, of course, the other way we foster leadership development is through a variety of events. Some of them are thought leadership focused in South Florida. So we just did a AI and cybersecurity roundtable with the CIO Council just a week or two ago. And then some of them are more people leadership focused. So we're putting together a 3-hour workshop on how to handle conflict as a leader, right? And that's something that'll happen here in August. And so that's just a flavor of these events that we do probably about once a month in the South Florida community that people can plug into and really unlock their own leadership skills. That's a little bit about SIM.
So shifting focus a little bit on your current role within the organization, I would imagine there's a lot of synergies with the work you're currently doing with the SIM as well. Maybe share a little bit more insight. What are the different problems that your current company is solving, and being the technology leader for the organization? Maybe speak a little bit further about the role of the CIO, the CTO, when it comes to the decision making at the strategic level of the organization. Essentially, having that seat at the board table and be more of a strategic partner rather than just a technology, service provider within the organization. Just curious to get your thoughts just overall on that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I feel that the consensus around CIOs and CTOs tends to be very technology focused, right? And so if you kind of think about a paradigm of people, process, and technology, I think an effective and impactful CIO or CTO really needs to have a highly distributed focus across all three of those elements. Some of the work that that we do in Sim South Florida, I personally learn a lot from. And the reason for that is because most of my role with MDVIP is about being an effective people leader. And that's not just simply, you know, for the technology team that I'm leading, but it's to be a model leader for the organization, right? To be a glue and a connector of the different parts of the business, to really help set the vision, set the tone for the organization, to be a culture keeper, right? So I feel that, I think that oftentimes we especially if we're not in the technology field, I've seen executives sort of gravitate, everybody who's in tech, to, you know, it's okay, what's the next, you know, cool, shiny object, right, from a tech standpoint that we need to think about, and how do we implement that? And yes, while that is important, I think probably where you want to start is this idea of how are you effectively building relationships at the board level, at the leadership level of the organization, amongst the teams of the organization. And almost sort of, I feel, even you know, at MDVIP, I feel like the technology team is really the glue that binds the organization together, right? We tend to have the most insights on data. We tend to have a pretty broad spectrum of relationships, obviously, as we support these various teams. And then because we are that glue, we have this unique opportunity and responsibility to help set the cultural tone for the organization, to drive innovation, to encourage people to think about the art of the possible, to empower them. And so I find myself focusing on that element of my role, probably more significantly than other elements of my role.
One of the most important areas for every leader within the organization, whether that's CEO, CIO, or anything on the operational side, is, well, it could be probably the most important task, and the priority is recruiting and surrounding yourself with the top performers and building that, you know, immaculate culture within the organization. I have a lot of debate with other C-level executives who, you know, more sales-oriented, who view business development and sales as the most important task, but I tend to, you know, wholeheartedly disagree with that. Share your thoughts on just ability to build that culture, maybe culture of innovation within the organization. What are your strategies to attract the top talent? Because I would imagine that's at the top of your mind 24/7. And just overall, your thoughts on retaining that top talent within the company.
Yeah, and I think it is highly contextual. I think every company has a cultural DNA that either it is satisfied with and wants to keep and wants to continue to foster, or it has a cultural DNA that it wants to transform and see differently. So both in my work at MDVIP, as well as sort of this fractional CTO work I do with many organizations, I've seen many, many different types of cultures, you know, take place. So to give you a kind of a sense of, you know, at MDVIP, what we find is people who do well at MDVIP and make a strong impact for the organization, these are people who are very mission-centric, right? And so if you think about our mission, you know, MDVIP's mission is to make healthier lives happen. Well, great. So naturally, we attract people who, through their work, want to impact society, want to impact health, but perhaps have a personal stake in that, right, via themselves or their family. And so that's a cultural context, right, that operates within MDVIP. And so, you know, to specifically answer your question around like attraction and retention, attracting people with that sense of mission, that sense of purpose, that sense of impact that you're able to create, whether you are a developer, you know, writing code, or whether you're an analyst, you know, collecting, you know, and analyzing requirements, or whether you're building a data science driven, you know, algorithm, right, to predict something. This sense of mission and purpose and impact is highly relevant as we recruit and interview individuals. And we try to kind of poke at that, right? Like we, you know, we'll ask questions like, so, you know, what made you interested, you know, in an opportunity with MDVIP? And really the right answer in many ways is sort of this desire to have meaning, right, in the work that they do. I consulted with a customer and helped them sort of recruit for some senior technology roles, not as a HR kind of recruitment person, but just somebody who could be a sounding board from a technology skill set and experience standpoint. And their culture was very much, you know, it reminded me of Amazon's culture of like every day is day zero, right? So very fast paced, don't blink, you know, highly biased towards action. And yes, while there are mission elements in that organization, and this was like more of a construction, like a mid-market construction company, right? That helped homeowners remodel their homes. But that sense of mission and community and impact didn't play as heavily in their culture, but the bias towards action did, right? So they tended to recruit a lot of folks out of, you know, they tended to have a lot of veterans, right? As an example in their organization, you know, folks who were disciplined and folks who were action, who had a bias towards action, and then were go-getters, right? So my point is that every organization has sort of these unique cultural attributes. And I think the first step is in terms of having an effective, you know, acquisition and talent retention strategy, it's really understand like what is the culture that we have, and there's many strategies and tools to do that. And then the second thing is, okay, well, is that our desired culture? And if not, then what is our desired culture? And then start creating a rubric of like the things that are important from a culture perspective to ask for as you're recruiting and going through the recruitment cycles for first your most senior leaders, but even down to the individual contributors. And once you have that, then you know, you can now then shift focus on retention. There are strategies to measure employee engagement. We heavily invest in those at MDVIP, and that helps us sort of keep a tab on our culture and employee engagement, which have obviously then, you know, an impact to retention. And then based on that, you can kind of assess like what kind of actions you need to take at a micro or macro level to keep and grow that culture. So those are some of the observations I've had and patterns I've seen in impacting culture and as a result, talent in the companies I work with.
In my current role, I'm on the board of quite a few organizations, and as a partner in a venture capital firm, we partner with a lot of C-level executives at organizations of various size, whether they're investors in the fund or just our peers in the industry, essentially on potential board opportunities within the companies we invest in or companies essentially we analyze or consider. The ongoing dialogue that I have with a lot of these board members or people that I share the board seats with is on the true value that the board member should bring to the company. And unfortunately, I also see a lot of activity around taking the board seats primarily just for the visibility and some type of marketing engagement, whether I'm a technology executive and I just want to list a couple of board seats that I'm on in my LinkedIn profile so that it boosts my overall presence. But there is not a lot of emphasis on the actual value that's being brought to the company as part of the board member. So curious to get your thoughts on that perspective. And I want to share some of my thoughts on some of the examples that I've seen of exceptionally valuable board members versus the ones that are just there for the presence and some type of visibility.
Yeah, being lucky to be in a role where there's frequent interaction with the board, and you know, and MDVIP is in the private space, right? So we've had a number of private equity kind of stakeholders, right? Over my 10-year career there, so I've seen boards of all kinds of shapes and sizes and variety So yeah, so I think probably like three criteria emerge in my mind for an effective board. The first one is that, do you have a board that's actually engaged? Do you have a board that, do you have board members that prep? Do you have board members that ask insightful questions? Do you have board members that help shape the agenda and the vision for the organization? That in itself is surprisingly not common. And I think that it's up to the, you know, whether it's founder, CEO, whoever's sort of recruiting and building a board out, or investors, I think it's incumbent upon them as they assess various board members to really get a sense of the level of engagement and commitment that that board member has to the company, the product, the people, the vision, right, of the company. So I think that is a valuable sort of and almost baseline expectation, but one that is not as common as you would think, at least in my experience, which is kind of surprising, right? But so when we have engaged board members, we love it, right? Like, we love board members that ask questions. We love board members that you know, are curious and engaged and interested and passionate about helping the organization. The second criteria, I would say, and oftentimes when companies are early stage, this is a key criteria, is you know, kind of relationship and network access, right? And so if, as a board member, are you able to identify opportunities, or are you able to accelerate opportunities that the company has via the relationships you have? And that's a very common kind of use case to bring people on the board. I've seen that obviously with smaller companies quite a bit. And I think that's good value add. I mean, if you want to be a board member, you know, be prepared to leverage your network, right, to drive additional insights and learning and connections and, you know, I don't know, potentially business, right, to the companies that that you support, obviously within all the ethical and legal kind of frameworks, right, that are in place. And then the third one, and this is kind of the most impactful, I would say. So the two that I've talked about, I feel almost are like base expectations. But one thing I think about as we, even as in a nonprofit scenario, when we think about board members for our the SIM South Florida chapter, or I think about, you know, the idea of like even having a personal board, right? So if I have I have this fractional CTO business, I'm a sole proprietor, but I have a board of advisors, right, that that I lean into, and you can call them mentors or call them a personal board, whatever it is, but somebody that kind of helps you elevate yourself. Or at a large organization like MDVIP, you have a board of directors that's effective. And like the last criteria I would hone in on is, do you have an organizational muscle or capability that you're lacking that you feel is imperative strategically for you? And so it could be a specific domain like customer experience. It could be a very tactical opportunity like in healthcare, you know, payer relationships or value-based care. It could be a discipline, kind of like customer experience, but more focused on like AI technology, whatever it is. But is there a muscle that the current board and the current leadership team has identified that they want to build more on, and the board member that they recruit can really help add value from that perspective and can bring the insights and introduce the practices and almost sort of co-create and co-collaborate? And some of the most engaging board relationships I've had is when, you know, the board member sort of evolves beyond the quarterly meeting, and they're actually start contributing almost as a team member, because they're just invested in the success of the business, and they want to bring the value, and they want to give back to the business in a meaningful way. So to me, those are kind of the three criteria, probably starting from base expectations to probably the most impactful. And yeah, I'd love to get your thoughts on kind of what makes an effective board member as well.
Well, clearly, you have experience in serving on corporate boards or even private organizations, even startups, and essentially it resonates on different levels when it comes to just understanding your your true mission with taking that particular board seat. And as you gain more experience and deal with different leadership of every organization and being able to identify the true needs of the current state of the company and be willing to tap into your personal network, what you've mentioned as far as introductions, recruiting, sales, and a lot of that great stuff. It's, of course, it's reputational at the end of the day because you're putting your own stamp on this, but that goes back to the beginning of why you even decided to take that particular board seat within this organization. And that definitely then creates that trickle down effect as you build that reputation of being a very valuable board member. Founders talk to each other all the time. It's a very small community, and that chatter definitely spreads quick. Essentially, that this is the type of board member you should definitely have at your on, maybe not on the cap table, but maybe at the actual table, because that particular individual understands the semantics of what a true board definitely looks like. There's a lot more beyond just the corporate governance, from the administrative, compliance, and logistics perspective. But essentially, just taking the simple board meeting, where you're not necessarily going in there with the mentality of, okay, we're just going to get a status update presentation from the leadership team and then we'll go off our ways. But more in a sense, we have done the homework prior to the actual board meeting. We've seen the actual presentation. We know where the company is at. We know all of the weaknesses and strengths at this juncture. And I come prepared to that meeting with my recommendations, with my introductions. So if the company needs a new marketing executive, I'm not going to go in there and say, okay, well, you should go tap into LinkedIn, recruiting agencies, and so forth, and hire and start interviewing. No, you come actually prepared with a few resumes of the folks from my personal network and showing that as an example of, here's the top candidate that you should definitely consider. So those are just some of the small examples of how, from what I've seen on other boards where the board is structured and comprised of extremely effective and value-adding members from that perspective. Beyond to the last portion of every episode, I like to focus on the guests directly and maybe share your personal thoughts on your content diet. What are the sources you consume on a daily basis? Maybe some examples of the latest books that you've read, or maybe a book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Yeah, that's that's an interesting one. So I think right now I kind of look at three streams of consciousness, right, as I consume content. So the first stream is obviously targeted more towards my role in terms of healthcare innovation, digital engagement, and just sort of patient journeys and how to kind of unlock healthcare and fix healthcare from a primary care perspective in the United States. And so there's a number of newsletters. There's a great one called Health Tech Nerds, which I love. I love that community, and they do a good job of curating healthcare content in that space. The other kind of conscious stream that I focus on is this idea of, and this goes back to again my role as a fractional CTO, this idea of helping middle market companies, right? So middle market companies are anyone from 10 million to a billion, right? But I tend to focus obviously on the lower end of that. But helping these companies really accelerate their own digital transformations. Oftentimes these are offline organizations, right? They're not digital. They're not selling a technology product or service. And so so there's actually a national market, National Institute for the Middle Market. I think it's run out of the University of Ohio. And they create some great content on just sort of the state of the middle market. And for that, there's also other organizations like ACG that do a good job of focusing on growth companies and sort of the pain points that are facing them. So I subscribe to their newsletters and feeds. I do tend to sort of focus more on established sources of content. And so I will, and this kind of goes to the last stream of consciousness about leadership, but I'll typically lean on, whether it's something that the Harvard Business School is putting out there. So I subscribe to that, or, Wharton is putting out there in terms of the latest leadership research and impact that they see, or it's one of the major kind of consulting organizations out there, whether it's Bain or McKinsey and some of the research that they're seeing. So I tend to sort of mix my content sources is between these, like, obviously I read the Wall Street Journal, right? So sort of between these sort of highly established players that have been there for like 20, 30 years, but they put out some great content, right? And they attract good talent to curate that content. But then also sort of, you know, one-off sources that are more recent. And so in healthcare, you know, I gave the example of Health Tech Nerds. There's a great one called CTO Academy, and that's a great leadership source of content that I love there. They send this thing called a 5-minute tech break, and that's a great source of just inspiration and wisdom from a leadership perspective that I enjoy reading every week. So I think from a content perspective, that's what I would say. In terms of books I've read, so I do have two little babies at home right now, so I unfortunately haven't gotten a ton of book reading done lately. Probably the last book that I read that really had an impact in how I thought about myself as a leader and even entrepreneurship and creating an impact in organizations and the community was this book called The Road to Character. And it was written by David Brooks, who's like, I think he's like a New York Times journalist, but he's done a lot of books over the years. But what I found fascinating about these books is that David Brooks contrasted like the idea of eulogy values with the idea of resume values, right? So there are things that we aspire to and build as part of our brand, and they're all kind of more focused on creating influence, creating a community, creating an impact, whether it's through a product, service, or some nonprofit. And, you know, we've talked about that throughout this conversation. But at the end of the day, David talks about that being as, you know, resume values. And then what he emphasizes is this idea of eulogy values, which is, well, what are people going to say when you pass away? And imagine like your own funeral, and like, what do you want people to say? And that goes back to family and connections, and Are you lonely, right, at that stage of life? And so I don't know, that book had a great impact on me. I think the point that he was trying to make is that even in professional environments, I think it's important to value eulogy values. It's important to value good character and kindness and helping each other and building strong connections and being respectful and all that good stuff, right? Golden rule type of stuff. And being a model for that, not just for yourself, so you drive towards these eulogy values, but also then being a role model for the folks that you're leading, right? Your teams, and prioritizing those things for your teams and focusing on family. So I can go on and on about eulogy values versus resume values, but that book really spoke to me, and highly encourage people to read it.
So. Those are great recommendations, Viom, and just overall very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with all the guests is do a follow-up recording in about a year just to see how much of change transpired and see if everything we've discussed still makes sense and applies. So I definitely thank you for your time today. I'm looking forward to meeting up in person sometime soon.
Sounds great. Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.